we'll transition into the part of the episode that is a potpourri of ideas. The first one is our broad section of community talks where we hear from you and then talk about you behind your back. Just kidding. But first, I believe that we have lovely feedback and a comment on a recent episode.
The lovely Lanka said this on episode 9, which was Kidfic. I love this episode so much. I learned lots from this episode and will try to keep them in mind. Also, the segment with pets with family dynamics is also something to consider. I haven't written pets with my family fix, and I plan to write more in the future. I might go back to this podcast as many times as I can to remind me of the wisdom that was discussed. More power to you all, and a little kissy face.
Lanka, thank you. Thanks. First of all, we are really glad that it could be a permanent resource because we don't even remember everything we said the first time we say it.
Oh God, I don't remember it as soon as it comes out of my mouth.
There are a lot of times where we have gone back and said, when did we say that? What did we say? And so we're glad that it's hosted permanently, but also we're glad that it could be a resource for you as you think through different ways to write your characters.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's kind of, that's so very on topic, Flame. But I just want to say briefly that when we were building this podcast, even when I hadn't yet said I wanted to be on air for when I was volunteering to help with the tech stuff, I knew right away that I was going to make a website for it. Not just because you have the most creative control with the website, but also because it was really important to me that it lived somewhere safe, just like how AO3 is safe. We know we can trust that team to archive our fix. I wanted to put it somewhere where I knew that those files were protected by me. So, yeah, that's part of why we put it on the website. So you can go back to it as many times as you want for as long as you like.
So in terms of deleting and archiving and keeping, like we've been talking about for this entire episode, we went to the Discord server and did a poll on how people feel about authors deleting fic. Now, this is a fairly hot-ish topic. Every once in a while, it'll kind of rear its head when people are looking for a fic that has been deleted and we get into a conversation about it. And the general consensus, not only among our server, but in other conversations I've seen, is that we understand that people have the right to do that and that they do it for any number of reasons, but it kind of always makes us sad that it happens. And that generally, especially on AO3, people would prefer if authors who just don't want to be associated with that work anymore, if they could orphan the fic so the fic still lives, but they don't have to be responsible for it. That's the preference of, I would say, the majority of fandom folks.
Yeah. If anyone doesn't know, you can go into a work and there is a setting to orphan it. It removes it completely from your account and it sets the author to orphan account. So it's still findable via its tags and its title and everything, but it will no longer be connected to you through AO3 at all. So if there is a fic you're thinking about deleting and has any bookmarks or kudos or comments on it, then that's one way to leave it available to readers, but take it out of your space.
Some folks admitted to us that they have in fact deleted things out of a sense of shame a couple times, like they just didn't like the writing style or they weren't particularly proud of the topic they covered, and then, you know, deleted it. There was somebody that did mention that they deleted it because they got a lot of harassment for the fic, which made me sad, and I'm sure that there's more people out there like that. And that some people have deleted it because they left the fandom. I know, you know, on fanfiction.net back in the day, there is not an orphan account. And there was definitely a swath of Harry Potter fic that I wrote, published on FFN, and then deleted when I kind of left the fandom. It didn't even occur to me because I had the self-esteem of a pancake that anyone would ever want to go back and read that again. So the other people didn't occur to me. I think on AO3 now the culture is a little bit more communal. We just talked about that.
I think that's a common perspective though. There's sort of this like internalized double standard that like, I don't want other good writers to delete their stuff because then I wouldn't have it anymore, but nobody likes my stuff, so it shouldn't hurt anyone if I delete my own things. And it can be hard for people to realize that for everybody's work of their own, they've got a reader out there who thinks that about them. I hope they don't delete their stuff because I really enjoy reading it. So I think a little bit of it is a self-esteem of, I mean, I realize there are a lot of reasons for deleting it, but for one subcategory of deleting things, there can be, you know, a bit of a, it's about the writer's relationship, not just with their fix, but this idea they have in their head that it has no readers, no lovers.
Oh yeah. For a long time, you could have knocked me with a feather if you told me that anybody went back and reread fix.
Yeah.
And that if I deleted it, I'd be depriving somebody of something that brought them joy. It really didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
And that has been evolution in my life of this fandom, which is great. I now promise you all that if I am tempted to delete, I will orphan instead.
Same.
But speaking of, one of the questions that was really fascinating, and I know you and I have spoken about this offline, is, and I'll use Wordsplat as the most recent example.
Yeah.
When Wordsplat left AO3, they did it without announcement, and the like earthquake of emotion throughout Stony fandom when those fics disappeared was not insignificant.
Yeah.
But a Google folder of various PDFs, EPUBs, Word docs that people have cobbled together have kind of been gathered of most of Wordsplat's fics. And I believe somebody told me that Wordsplat blessed that retroactively, that they're okay that their fics are still being read. They just didn't want them on AO3 anymore. But what happens, like that's a very famous example, and Wordsplat was somebody that people were still in touch with and could kind of double check on that front. But there's been other people that do that, or other people that were never really part of the community of fandom or things like that that we haven't double checked. How do people feel when their deleted fics are out there? Because the internet is written in ink. You have, once you put something up there, there's not really any control over what it does. Even if you do delete it from AO3, it's on someone's computer or Kindle or phone.
Yeah.
And so how do people feel about the sharing of those works after they are deleted?
I mean, obviously I imagine that everybody feels differently about it. And since people who delete and disappear have disappeared, it's hard to ask them how they feel about it. I know that the Finding Empire, which you talked to S earlier in this episode about, we have a policy where if we know a work was deleted or we get a reply that, hey, it's this work, but it was deleted, we don't link it. We just say, you know, if that this work was deleted. And that's just because we don't know how people feel about it. And our reach is so broad that it could verge on spreading that piece again, which may be what they don't want to do, or drawing attention to their social media, which they may not want people to do. So that's sort of our public policy. But I do know I have some downloaded fics where if somebody was in a Discord server with me and they said, oh, hey, I was trying to find this, I would certainly DM it to them. And if multiple people asked for it, I might even post it in chat for a bit and then usually delete it after everyone's had a chance to grab it. So yeah, I don't know. I feel like the sort of etiquette line has become just sort of naturally like, hey, don't post it anywhere public, but feel free to share it directly with people who want it, even if that's a group of people. And that seems to be like the line that we've been walking that's hopefully making the most people as happy as it's possible to make people who have disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
But because you also have to remember too, that, I mean, very realistically, like I said before, the internet is written in ink.
Yeah. And you never know, like, we also talked briefly about, the Wayback Machine, which is an internet archiving project where you can give it a link and it will take a picture of what's presently there and save that. And then you can go back and find things that way. And there's a lot of AO3 that's gone now that is still available on the Wayback Machine. And I know that there are people who actively enter the links for the fix that they would never want to lose into the Wayback Machine. And I guess there's sort of, part of it is the responsibility of the people who are posting to recognize that as soon as you share anything, anywhere on the internet, even a place that feels locked, even if it's behind, you know, AO3 account, limit or on a locked Twitter or just to your friend on Discord, everything you share on the internet is on someone else's computer in some way. And there is no way to be 100% sure that it's not going to be shared or seen, even if you delete it. So some of that is on the people who are choosing to post on AO3, you know, to everybody, myself included. Remember, anybody can add a link to your fic to the Wayback Machine. Anybody can save a PDF copy. AO3 is built like that. So you don't know if it's getting shared, and you should go into it expecting that it will be shared and that you won't be able to fully remove it from the internet.
So one of the emotional reactions that I recommend to that is to get really used to saying, oh, that's what I thought then, that's not what I think now, if it's something you're embarrassed about. If it represents, like I've been saying for most of the last 5 years of my life, we need to normalize changing our minds.
Mm.
There is fic that I wrote when I was but a wee flame that would, I mean, mortify me on vomit-inducing levels, if any of you read it. And I am lucky that I've gone through a bunch of iterations and there, that was a different username and there's no connection between those things. So unless you really, really, really were obsessed with me or hated me, be hard to find the connection between those pics. You can do it. Please don't. But it is still possible. I've still been the same person, even though the email and username and IP addresses, everything else is different in who I am on AO3 than who I was when I was posting way back then. It all can still be found if someone really wanted to.
Yeah.
And you don't need to panic. You don't need to anything else, but I think a healthy awareness of that is important. And remember that what you wrote yesterday, or if you don't like it today, you're allowed to go, oh, that worked yesterday, it doesn't work now, and not delete it. Like, you are allowed to just not like something.
Yeah. And but AO3 also does give you the power to delete stuff. It does give you the power to orphan stuff or post things anonymously. And I think that, we're always going to have to kind of wobble down this line because it's a tricky topic. We were talking about the early days, you know, way back when, if you had your stuff published in a zine, you couldn't go out and take back the copies of the zine that other people had. But at the same time, there was a limited number of copies and it's possible that they were all lost. So there's two perspectives there. One, you've put it out there and you can't take it back. The other side, as a reader or a consumer or an archiver, it's a very tenuous way to have something saved. And, you know, one flood, one fire, one this, one that, someone moves, drops it in the trash, then they could all be gone. So, yeah, it's sort of there's a trade-off. We can archive things more efficiently, more effectively, more securely now, but that also makes it harder to get rid of stuff. But I also feel like there's a lot to be explored there of why we have the impulse to get rid of stuff. And I know people have a lot of different reasonings for it, and obviously we can't fully dive into that right now, but if it's a conversation you guys want to keep having on the Discord, we're certainly open to that continuing. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, we have to be respectful and kind and generous to people who shared their work and have decided to unshare it. But as work sharers, we also have to recognize that while we can delete our immediate connections to something, we can't fully erase our fingerprints from it, and the odds that we can remove from the internet at large are next to zero.
So happy news. Everything's complicated.
Yay.
One of the reasons that people might delete their fic is fandom drama.
Yeah.
And we don't know you guys, but we love talking about drama.
We're popcorn people.
And we're curious what you are. So we're this month's Stony Secret question, which we'll keep up for the next 2 episodes. We'd love to, and we'll keep it up forever, but we'll be focusing on it for the next couple episodes, is we would love to know, essentially, when it comes to fan drama, are you somebody who rolls up your sleeves and gets involved, wants to kind of resolve things and help people in all parties or the party that you believe strongly, you know, do you get involved? Or are you often more like Farid and myself, where you're in a million DM conversations about it and watching it? Now, need to say this. There has been some fandom drama recently, which has been about matters of ethics and matters of like people's personal safety. And we're not necessarily talking about that kind of fandom drama. No. We're talking a little bit more about tiffs.
Spats.
We are not talking about like the actual meltdowns and end servers necessarily. What we're really talking about is the stuff that's silly but still dramatic and that we all really care about because humans care about dramatic things.
Yeah. So send us in your Stony Secret and let us know how you feel about fandom drama. And if you've seen some drama that you can effectively censor, because we don't want to out anybody specific on anything. So if you can sort of tell us vaguely about something that happened and we can't figure out who it is, then we would also love to know specifically what drama you've seen or been involved with. If we think that it's too identifying, we'll have to admit that part of your response. But let us know how you feel about fandom drama. And if you're in, out, or on the sidelines.
And now, for the moment we have all been waiting for. The trope off final!
It's over! I cannot believe this. First of all, I can't believe it's been a year, because I did look it up and it has been a year. Which is crazy. And part of that is I did not set a schedule for this and there were large empty swaths of time when I didn't post one at all. But I'm thrilled. It seemed like about 100, 120 people were consistently participating, which is super fun. But here we are. The final is over. I let it run for a week, so no one can complain they didn't have a chance to vote. And our final winner is Mutual Pining. Mutual Pining went through this competition 6-0. It won every single face-off it had.
Well, considering the fandom that we are in, I don't know if anyone should be surprised.
Right? I mean, I assume it's mostly Stony people who voted because I probably mostly have Stony people who follow me on Twitter, but it's not like I ever said you had to be Stony to participate. So I am curious if it was entirely Stony people, but still, I get it.
Nope.
I get it.
But also, like, Stucky is full of Mutual Pining. Winter Iron is full of Mutual Pining. Yeah. Like, I think Marvel as a fandom in broad sense. Like, I have been parts of fandoms that don't have the Mutual Pining as much. But this whole group of idiots.
Yeah.
Not big on using their words.
So, our final score for our final face down was Mutual Pining versus Soulmates, and Mutual Pining won 54-46, which isn't a total blowout. Like, Soulmates made a good run, and that put Soulmates in second place with a silver medal, and they went 6-2. And as we discussed last time, our third place bronze medal winner is ABO, and they went 4-2. So those are some pretty good stats. And if you look at my Tumblr and my Twitter, which will be just a link to my Tumblr, I am doing a full rundown post that you can see there. It'll have the full standings and some interesting statistics about the various face-offs that we had and how we ended up where we are. But yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I'm really thrilled. And I did also had my sealed envelope where I said who I thought would be in the final running, that I discorded myself early on. And I was half right and half wrong, because I said that I thought the final would be Mutual Pining versus Hurt Comfort. But Hurt Comfort
also
was a while ago.
Your personal...
I mean, that's the two I would have voted for as well. But I thought Hurt Comfort was more popular than it ended up being.
I wonder if people think of Hurt Comfort as a trope.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
That's an issue, because I certainly don't. I think of it more as a writing style in a certain way.
Interesting.
But like, so if I was going to talk about, like, I'm writing a Hurt Comfort fic right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is Soulmates. I would be, if I talked to you about it, I would call it the Soulmate fic and not the Hurt Comfort fic.
That's fair. But I also think that, I mean, for for one thing, Trope Off is definitely not just limited to tropes, because they definitely have like AUs and stuff like that in there too that people wouldn't necessarily consider tropes.
Oh, fair. I forgot about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's tropes and genres and AUs and like a whole bunch of different things, but I can see considering like Soulmates would definitely be a trope and not a genre, whereas Hurt Comfort could kind of be either depending on how you approach it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that what, like I think I said this in chat a couple of weeks ago, that we use the term trope as an umbrella term to mean all of these things, but it's also can be used as a more specific term for like, if you have a more academic view of these things, but that like the actual way that we relate with them in fandom, we can just call them all tropes and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Like this is academic flame.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just, I think that like it actually, we would spend too much time trying to dissect what counts as a trope if we sat down and tried to do that.
Someone's about to ask us to do that.
Well, go. You can go to here, TVTropes.com. They've done all of the science for you already.
Yeah, so don't add us. But Ferret, on behalf of the fandom, I would like to thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Because it was super fun. And we got, like, I'm not the only one who thinks that. Many people love this. Also as evidenced by how many people really seem to enjoy yelling at you.
Yeah, it made everybody so mad. And that's like my brand, so I'm super into that.
We have been teased that there will be a trope off too.
Who said that?
I don't know. Maybe my favorite Mustelid. this was a lot of stats and a lot of work. Are you still thinking that you're going to be able to do that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to do a round two. I will take a little bit of time off, but not too much, because I like the momentum I have here. And also I assume that people are only on my Twitter for two things, pet pictures and trope off, because I don't post anything else. And I want to keep those people happy. So yes, I will definitely be doing a round two. In fact, if you check out the show notes, I've posted a way that you guys can submit your ideas for round two. I cannot promise I will use them. I will be curating the list from suggestions and from my own ideas, but so I'm not going to make any promises about how I'm going to do that, but I am open to everybody's contributions for what they think should be on the list for Trope Off 2. Please look at the full list for Trope Off 1 before you send me in something for Trope Off 2, because it cannot be something that was in Trope Off 1.
Interesting. So we've got some limits, but some really exciting stuff coming up.
Yes, and it's going to be 25 tropes again. And like I said, they can be tropes, they can be AUs. Try to keep them broad. We don't want anything that's so specific that nobody would vote for it simply because it's going to be up against something broader. Like I will say that when we had face-offs between something more specific and something broader, the broader one did tend to win. Yeah, you give it a little thought before you just say, oh, like this isn't an opportunity, like this isn't sending me prompts. So it's not an opportunity to be like, oh, I'd love to see an XYZ AU and submit that, because it's not going to win. So try to think of those tropes that are really beloved in fandom and stay broad. And we'll form Trope Off 2. And when it's ready to go, this segment will be back on the pod again. And we'll start from the beginning.
And we'll see you guys then.
And now it is time for our fourth episode of Life of an Event. This is where we talk about the event that Flame and I are running called Stuckoni Summer Stocking, and let you know a little bit of the behind the scenes fun, the behind the scenes tears, and the behind the scenes excitement.
Yeah. So since we last talked to you, which we were discussing some of the issues with AO3 technology in a way that we hadn't really anticipated.
Yeah.
But in between that time and this time, stockings have opened.
Mm-hmm.
And we are beyond delighted at the enthusiasm already. We have, the claims have begun, and we have over half of the stockings have already been claimed at least once.
Well over half, yeah.
So you did numbers right. So we have 33 claims for 44 stockings.
Yeah, but some have been claimed more than once, so that's not 33 stockings claimed, because people are allowed to claim one stocking as many times as they want. But since we also didn't require claims, I'm sure people are looking at stuff and sniffing around stockings that they haven't felt confident enough to claim, which is totally fine. We appreciate the claims, but they aren't required. And we are very early on, but we also already have 3 fills submitted.
Amazing. That's more Stoconi content to make people happy.
Very excited for this. I should also note that, and this is a helpful tip for other people running this kind of event as well, we haven't started approving the fills that have come in yet. We're going to let them accumulate a little bit, because when you approve something for a prompt meme like this or for an exchange, it shows that that person's fill has been submitted. They will see either that they have a gift, or on the prompt meme, it'll show one of the claims will turn into a mystery fan work. And it also collects all the tags that are used in the collection. So if you only have 1 approved fan work, then people will know exactly which tags are on it. If you only have 2, they'll have a pretty good idea of which tags are on it. So I like to let us get up to at least 5 or 10 before we start officially approving them, so that we can kind of approve them all at once, and then the tags will just be a mishmash and people can kind of maybe have a look, but it won't ruin any surprises.
Yeah, because remember, even as people fill these and post these and we approve them, the fix will not be revealed until September 25th. Mm-hmm. And then the people that have written, the authors, will not be revealed until the most important day of October, which is the 3rd of October, which is also my birthday.
Birthday for Flame. So if anyone wants to fill a Flame stocking, then you're doing double duty there with a birthday present as well.
I will just assume it was a birthday present. So this is one of the kind of fun things about this kind of event, is that the mystery anticipation is built in.
Yeah, and everyone can kind of see, they can see their claims build up, they can see the claims turn into fan works, but everything's a complete mystery. And I like that people can make a fill, they commit to that one fill, maybe, you know, for themselves, and then, oh, I still have time, they can make another one. So yeah, we really encourage people to try and keep things small so that they can make a couple, because an event like this works best if everybody who signed up made 3 small things, everybody would get 3 small things on average. So, and we're hoping that we're drawing in people who didn't sign up as well. So yeah, it's really exciting to see people start to claim stuff. And I know that this is just the beginning.
Yeah, and a reminder, like, for instance, I'm creating a couple fills and I haven't claimed them at all, just because I'm not, for my own administrative purposes, I don't like to do it until I'm about to post. So that is completely valid for people. With small fills, remember, it can be a combination of things. I love doing really tiny fix, but also some mood boards. And there's a couple of the fills I'm doing for that for people.
Lovely.
I don't know anyone who would turn down sketches and art includes like doodles, you know, like it's all that kind of stuff. We're not looking for the next great American novel here. We're just looking to make people happy.
If you're someone who celebrates Christmas or uses the stocking idea for gifts for any of the holidays you do celebrate, my mother-in-law always did Santa sacks because they didn't have actual stockings, but, the concept is you get a bag with lots of little things in it. So the goal is to put some care and effort, but not make one big giant epic thing, but a couple of little fun things, so people get to pull out a couple of things out of their stocking.
For instance, Mama Flame always puts toiletries in our stockings.
Nice.
So I stop buying deodorant somewhere around the middle of November if I don't really need it, because I know it's coming. So I always get deodorant, I always get toothpaste, I get razor blades, and then I get chocolate. That's a stocking in the Flame extended family.
So if you feel that your fan works are deodorant, then go ahead and put them in. That's fine too.
Correct. There's something in there. I was just giving a stocking example, but this is, you know, deodorant still really, nope, can't do it. Can't go there. It's too late at night. If I come up with it later, I'll let you know.
You could slide a few condoms into mine.
Yeah, maybe there's lube. I mean, hopefully not to my mother, but.
Well, the joy of this is that none of these fills will be from your mother.
Very, very true. God love my mother.
I can't guarantee none of them would be from mine.
No, that's true. Although I think like my mother can barely remember who Tony Stark is. So even though she has seen all the Iron Man movies at least 7 times. So I think we don't, but my mother would give you all cookies.
Oh, that'd be nice.
That she would personally email everyone to make sure that the recipes met your specification.
Lovely.
Because I come by this crazy honestly, but no, it would have nothing to do with fandom.
Thankfully, I mean, I love cookies, but this is July, so we don't need clementines and deodorant. We need Stacconi Fanworks. We are also, as from a mod perspective, we are making the posts, we are turning the stockings into Tumblr posts. It's a simple but mind-numbing process. It involves a lot of copy-pasting. And that's, as much as I love automating things, Tumblr 90% of the time is just not worth it. If you ever want to talk about the hells of automating things for Tumblr, it is approximately 2 months of my life for MTH each year. So feel free to get in touch and I'd be happy to vent about that. But for this, we said, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to do it by hand. There's only 44. And they will be finishing up sometime early next week. And so like looking forward, as there's not going to be like a lot of changes until we get into early to mid-September. And at that point, we're going to be looking at which stockings need a little extra attention, seeing if there's ways we can drum up more attention for certain stockings or just for the event entirely, and what fills we can do. And see if we need to do any kind of targeted recruitment or anything, you know, like if there are some specific things people are looking for, if we know there might be people, we could be like, hey, I think you would go really well with this stocking. Do you want to make something for it? Like, these are the sorts of things that we're thinking about behind the scenes as we move through the next 2 months or the next month and a bit and consider how we can maximize everybody's happiness with what they get on reveal day.
Yeah, several people have asked me that they're worried about people who may not be very popular, I'm using air quotes, and may not get as many fills or get any fills. And I think we've said this on the pod, but in case we haven't, Ferret and I are going to make sure that everybody has at least one, if not at least a couple.
Yeah.
So don't worry. I know some people get nervous stomachs for other people. Don't worry. Everybody will get joy as part of this.
It's true. And also, I find that this kind of event, like, people really don't look at names. They just look at the prompts. They're not making fills for people they know or just for their friends. They're making fills for whatever inspired them. So whatever your tags or prompts are, any of the ideas or characters you threw in there, that's what's going to grab people. And, you know, maybe they'll make one for their best friend and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, the vast majority of fills end up going because somebody saw the stocking and said, oh, cool, I could do that. So I really wouldn't worry if you don't know anyone. Usually, that doesn't really have an impact.
No, and I'll say the pot stocking event that we ran over Christmas is actually how I met a lot of people in the pot server.
Yeah.
Very active there at all. And so I didn't know what people would like. I didn't know how to add all the inside jokes or anything else that people may assume that people want. I really just went off their prompts. I ended up creating
great.
Some of the best fics I think I've ever written. I think I created for that event. So please don't, this is a great, I've never created anything before event. This is a really great, I don't know anybody, but I really like these characters event. That, like, you know, this is very.
Yeah. And the flip side of this is if you're a creator, you don't have to, please never look at a stocking and say, I don't know who that is. So I don't feel comfortable filling it. The whole point is people have put all the information that you need to know in the stocking. If it's not in there, it wasn't important enough for them to include it. You've got their likes, you've got their do not wants, you've got tags, you've got characters, just go for it. Don't be like, oh, what if they're famous and they judge me? No, that's not how these events work. Pick a prompt, do it.
Yeah. And do it before you overthink it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go with your gut. If you read something and go, oh my God, this would be really fun too, go create it, done, and move on. Don't, I got a couple people asking us if like we would provide beta services and everything else. From us, no. Like, there's lots of opportunities to find that kind of stuff. But we're not asking you to put forward garbage or anything or to put forward not your best foot. This is also not a bang. Like, create joy and move on.
Yeah, you can have fun with 1,000 words. It doesn't have to be 25,000 words. It doesn't have to be the most epic plot you've ever done. The goal here is to make little, you know, little chocolates. One of the equivalent, I guess chocolate box is an exchange, but I always like this. I think if the stocking metaphor doesn't work for you, think about a little set of truffles in a box. Each one has a different flavor, but they're all something the person likes, and they can just eat all these little morsels of tasty fic goodness or art or whatever it is you make. last time on Grammar Corner, we talked about parts of speech. And today we're going to talk about phrases and clauses. And we're going to look a little bit at some ways that we can make mistakes with phrases and clauses. So the parts of speech are like the small Lego blocks of grammar. When we stick them together, we create phrases. And we can create clauses, which we then stick together again to form sentences. Today, we're going to talk about SVO, phrases, and clauses. I know y'all really want to know how this stuff applies directly to what you're writing when it comes to like punctuation and stuff like that. And I really do want to get there, but these foundations are super important. That being said, we are going to touch on a couple of things at the end that hopefully apply directly to what you're creating right now. First, we're going to quickly review the idea of SVO, subject, verb, object. English is considered an SVO language. This means that we order the parts of our sentences with the subject first, the verb next, and the object last. There are quite a few other classifications, but with SVO combined with SOV, that makes up 75% of Earth's studied languages. So even if English is not your first language, there's a good chance you're going to be comfortable with this construction and that one of your other languages, either native or otherwise, is either SVO or SOV. SOV is the second most common order, so you're most likely to have a language that's SOV. So the subject of the sentence is the noun phrase that the sentence is about. The verb is the phrase that adds action or doing. The object is sometimes optional depending on the verb, and it's what the action is being done to. Some verbs also take more than one object. So what do I mean by phrases? Phrases are clumps of words that form a more complex concept than a single word, but do not express a complete idea and do not contain a subject and a verb. We can form phrases that act as if they are one of the single parts of speech we discussed last week. So for example, we can stick together a determiner, the, two adjectives, sweet and fluffy, and a noun, ferret, and get the noun phrase, the sweet, fluffy ferret. This phrase has no verb, the ferret isn't doing anything, and it doesn't complete a whole idea, but it can be dropped into a sentence wherever you might use a noun. Steve steals all my hair ties. This sentence has a proper noun, Steve, in the subject position. The sweet fluffy ferret steals all my hair ties. This sentence has the noun phrase, the sweet fluffy ferret, as the subject of the sentence. So in the sweet fluffy ferret steals all my hair ties, the subject is the sweet fluffy ferret, the verb is steals, and the object is all my hair ties. If we add an adverb, that becomes part of the verb phrase. The sweet fluffy ferret cruelly steals all of my hair ties. This breaks down into the subject, the sweet fluffy ferret, the verb, cruelly steals, and the object, all of my hair ties. We can also swap things around. Steve loves my sweet fluffy ferret. Now Steve is back in the subject position, but my sweet fluffy ferret, without changing, has become the object. In order to determine which is the subject and which is the object, ask yourself, who or what is doing the verb? And who or what is having the verb done to them? So there can be many other bits and pieces in the sentence besides adding an adverb that tack onto various parts to add more description or make the sentence more complex. And a sentence can also be made up of more than one clause, which is what we're going to get into now. Clauses, yay! So what's a clause? A clause is a group of words that contains a subject and a verb. They can be whole sentences on their own or partial sentences that need more to stand on their own. This makes them more complex than phrases. There are a few different kinds of clauses, but we can separate them generally into independent clauses and dependent clauses, sometimes called main clauses and subordinate clauses. This is the part that's most important when it comes to punctuation. Independent clauses are self-sufficient clauses that don't need no scrub, nor do they need any other phrases or clauses to classify as a complete sentence. Though, if they're feeling lonely, they can still take them. An example of a very simple independent clause is dogs bark. It has a subject, dogs, and a verb, bark. And since the verb is intransitive, which means it does not take an object, it's not missing any pieces to be a full sentence. If I say flame brings, your response is, well, what does flame bring? And that's because while this clause has a subject, flame, and a verb, brings, the verb is transitive or monotransitive, if that helps, which means it needs an object to feel complete as a person. If I say flame brings all the boys to the yard, we have all the boys as the object, which completes the verb, and to the yard as a prepositional phrase as well. This in its entirety forms an independent clause. If you're trying to figure out if a clause is independent, the best way to do it is to remove all clauses attached to it or embedded to it and see if it's grammatically whole on its own by asking, where is the subject? Where is the verb? Does the verb have the appropriate number of objects for its transitivity? And does it complete a whole idea? So what are dependent clauses? Dependent clauses still have a subject and a verb that is carrying the right number of objects with it, but they still need more. Why? Usually because they're inherently asking a question that isn't being answered within the clause itself, and therefore it's not a complete idea. There are three common types of dependent clauses: adjective, sometimes called relative clauses, noun clauses, and adverbial clauses. Adjective clauses modify a noun, just like single adjectives do. So in the sentence, the man who wields the shield is Captain America. Who wields the shield has a subject, who, and a verb, wields, which is taking the object, the shield. But it's not a sentence on its own because it doesn't complete a thought, and therefore it's not an independent clause. So instead, the adjectival clause is attached to the main clause, the man is Captain America, to distinguish which man specifically we're talking about. Noun clauses act like a noun in a sentence. So instead of modifying a noun, like who wields the shield modified the man in our last example, these sorts of clauses are a whole ass noun all on their own. So we could say, whoever wields the shield is Captain America. And whoever wields the shield is a noun clause, just like we dropped in the sweet fluffy ferret earlier. Lastly, we have adverbial clauses, which, you guessed it, modify a verb. Sam Wilson is Captain America until he hands the shield off. Until he hands the shield off modifies the is verb and is the adverbial clause. We also use adverbial clauses for comparison. The shield is as awesome as it is heavy. The as awesome as it is heavy is an adverbial clause. These are usually the ones people find hardest. So if the adverb distinction is hard for you, or if you're not sure if the clause is an adverbial clause, a relative clause, or a noun clause, don't worry about it. The most important thing that you need to be able to identify is independent clauses and dependent clauses. Since a lot of this stuff is intuitive for languages you speak, it's usually easier to think of this more as a way to take sentences you already have and break them down to understand how they're built or determine if you're punctuating them correctly, instead of to try and think of your sentences this way as you're building them. You don't want to come up to a gap in a sentence and be like, can I add an adverbial clause here? That's not going to help you write better. These are tools to check and see if your sentences are complete and to make sure that you haven't made any grammatical errors, or if you have, you're doing them on purpose. So how can clauses go wrong? There are two different mistakes we're going to talk about and how to fix them: sentence fragments and run-on sentences. These are the things that can actually help you apply this knowledge about clauses to your work to make sure you're doing things correctly. Sentence fragments are missing something crucial, be it the subject or the verb, or be it the rest of the complete thought. Steals all my hair ties is missing a subject. The sweet fluffy ferret with a hat is missing a verb. But honestly, these sorts of things are hardest to spot when you've got complex sentences, not simple ones. What about if you hear a loud bang and Steve turned sharply towards the now open door? It kind of sounds like a full sentence, doesn't it? But it's not. It's missing a verb. But you say there's a verb. Turned is a verb. But let's break down the construction of the sentence. A loud bang and Steve turned. This kind of conjunction is attempting to join two independent clauses. It's not listing items or connecting bang and Steve to turn. You're not saying a loud bang and Steve both turned. It's saying a loud bang and then Steve turned. So it's trying to join two independent clauses. So if we remove the and everything after it, we should be left with our first independent clause, but we're not. A loud bang is just a noun phrase. It needs a verb and a complete thought to finish. So the complexity of the sentence can mask the fact that there's a piece missing for it to be grammatically correct. To fix it, we could make it a loud bang rang out and Steve turned sharply towards the now open door. You could also make it one independent clause and say a loud bang caused Steve to turn sharply towards the door. What about run-on sentences? There are three kinds of run-on sentences. You might know the kind that has too many clauses joined with conjunctions. Tony loves Bucky and he wants to spar with Steve, and Rhodey's his best friend and he's married to Pepper. It's sort of technically grammatically correct at a fundamental level because all the pieces are stuck together the way that they are allowed to stick together, but it's very much not pretty. We call it a polysedentin run-on, which just means lots of conjunctions. You can fix this type by splitting it up into separate sentences or structuring it so you've got things stuck together in different ways, but basically not having conjunction after conjunction after conjunction. And we also can find that it doesn't have to be a list of conjunctions or polysedentin to feel like a run-on. If you have too many dependent clauses all wrapped up with a independent clause and it's just too many things stacked upon each other, that'll feel like a run-on sentence as well. And again, the way to fix it is to split it up into separate sentences. The next two types are going to sound the same out loud unless I do the punctuation for you. So we've got a comma splice, which is when two complete independent clauses or entire sentences are stuck together with a comma and no conjunction. So Morgan wants chicken nuggets for lunch, comma, nuggets are her favorite. It's called a comma splice because you're splicing or sticking together two sentences with a comma when they need to stand on their own. We get the same with a fused sentence where we're sticking two together without a comma or a conjunction or any punctuation at all. Peter Parker is Spider-Man, he's the best web slinger. You can fix both these kinds of run-ons with periods or semicolons. If you're using a semicolon, you're suggesting that the ideas are very related, more closely related than two separate sentences. So for our first, I'd be most likely to use a semicolon. Morgan wants chicken nuggets for lunch, semicolon, nuggets are her favorite. And remember that you do not use a capital after the semicolon. Whereas for the second example, I would probably use a period for that. Peter Parker is Spider-Man, period, he's the best web slinger. But semicolons in this case are very much going to be a matter of artistic desire, whatever speaks to you, however you want to inform the reader about the relationship between sentences. And we can certainly talk more about semicolons, how to use them, what they mean, because they do have a couple of other uses in a future episode. But for now, hopefully this gives you a basic idea of how clauses can be dependent or independent, how to identify them in your work to make sure that you have all the pieces that you need and that your pieces are stuck together.
Hi, fandom. This is Only More Love, back to tell you all about what's going on challenge-wise in a Marvel fandom near you. A little note before I start with the current events. You'll be able to find everything I mention in this forecast, linked and explained in the show notes of each episode over on podonthesuit.com. Folks, here's some fandom fun we have to look forward to for our last 2 weeks of summer. The Tiny Reverse Bang is still going strong and will continue until September 5th. Just a reminder that the last week, August 29th through September 5th, is meant to be a dedicated amnesty week, during which you may post any remaining works you started at any point and for any prompt from this year's TRB. Please show us the nice things you made. The creating phase of the Steve Tony games is officially over, with Mod Cat hard at work checking points for the whopping 698 fills total that were made by the teams. What this means is it's now time to comment bingo like never before. I need to mention one correction of the rules we stated last time. 1 point will be awarded per row of comments on a work created by your team of choice when you submit your links, and an added 25-point bonus will be awarded to your team for every 25 bingos. Have fun reading, listening to, or ogling the beautiful works from this year's round. Round 2 of this year's Cap IM Bingo is officially ongoing. To participate, go grab a card now, or at any point until January 31st. The August Tony Stark Flash Bingo is still going, so go pick up one of the pretty cards if you want to join in the fun, and keep an eye out for the September Flash cards that should be released around August 25th as well. For both months, the mods will be releasing a series of 9 cards containing 5 prompts each. You can choose to fill any square on the board of your choice, but are asked to please complete a board before you pick another one. Additional info and schedule, as well as minimum requirements, lowered from those of the main bingo, can be found on the blog. Spoiler alert, there are badges for the flash bingo too. August 23rd to August 29th is the scheduled week for this year's Stony Week. Prompts are already out on their Tumblr blog, so go brainstorm. There are no minimum requirements, and all media are accepted. Also keep an eye out for the opening of the Marvelously Naughty Bang signups, which should open on August 22nd and go on until October 10th for writers and November 14th for artists. Who's excited for an Omegaverse bang? Stocking stuffing is ongoing for Flareit's Stocconi Summer Stockings. You have until September 25th to gift people little Stocconi gifts corresponding to any element they put in their signup. The guidelines are very simple. Try to keep to a maximum of 1,000 words for fix or matching effort level for other media so that the love gets spread between all 43 of the stockings. Creators are anonymous until the end of the event, so hush hush. For any additional questions you may have a look at Flareit's Guide to Filling a Stocking on Tumblr. Signups for the Stucky Bingo are open for 2 more weeks, as they should close on August 31st. The round itself will go on until May 31st, 2021, with master posts expected June 6th, 2021. So if you happen to love 2 super soldiers together, follow our link to the blog. Another ship week we mentioned before is coming up soon. The Sinful Spider Week for shipping Spidey with either or all of the following: Tony, Bucky, Steve, Deadpool, Quentin Beck, Thor, or Loki, and more, as long as your ship remains within the spirit of the event, aka problematic. The week will happen between August 23rd and 29th, and the prompts can be found on their blog. Do you ship Darcy and Tony, or Darcy and Steve, or all 3 of them? Do you like soulmates? Because Soul Tember is back for another round, guys. Go check out the prompts for this themed month on their blog. Frost Iron, Frost Shield, Frost Iron Shield, Thunder Iron, Thunder Shield, Thunder Iron Shield. If any of these are your jam, go check out Loki Bingo or Thor Bingo. Both opened signups last week. Check out all additional info on their respective blogs for Asgardian goodness. The Sun and Storm in Every Blossoming comment fest for Black MCU characters on Dreamwith. The Cap I Am comment bingo. Cap I Am kink meme and Lights on Park Avenue, as well as the Starker Festival's Starker Summer Bingo are still open for participant signups and or contributions. And the links to all these are still in our show notes of the past episodes. The Cap I Am Big Bang Discord chats are also happening on the same rotation of 2 weeks. Finally, Marvel Trumps Hate has announced its schedule. Creator signups will open in 1 month's time on Sunday, September 13th, 12 a.m. Eastern Time. Creators may offer different types of works such as fix, art, edits, videos, beta services, crafts, and more for any character, ship, or universe in the Marvel Multiverse. Signups will run until Saturday, September 26th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, which should give everyone plenty of time to think about what they'd like to offer, spread the word, and sign up as a creator. This year, there will be a preview week from October 11th to October 17th, during which potential bidders can peruse all the auctions and start building their list of fan works to bid on. We will also use this time to make corrections to auction pages before bidding begins. The 2020 MTH Auction Week will then run from October 18th to October 24th. So either start saving your pennies or start prepping your offerings. Or better yet, both. This has been your events forecast. Until next time, take care and happy shipping.
And that's a wrap on episode 13. We want to thank S for chatting and to the Casual Cheesecake for the art. Thanks to the podcast staff for all they do, as always.
Thank you to our research team for helping us dig up some stuff on archiving. Don't forget to send us your stony secrets about fandom drama.
As always, please remember this is your fandom podcast, and we want it to be the best it can be for you. So please keep commenting, chatting in the server, and sending us messages all across our social media. We hope to see you in Ketchup Club in our Discord server as well. It runs every week starting on Wednesdays, and right now is on Drunk Flare It. So you can join in at any time.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in episode 14.
You've been listening to Pod on the Suit. Thanks for joining us.